This is Craig. We've got Kirk and Scott here. And Scott, I want to venture into the realm that you are an international celebrity, a star of considerable renown with your View from the Couch, a syndicated radio show. What was the biggest story in sports yesterday?
Well, up here in Minnesota, we got our own scandal, but the biggest story was probably Baylor. Nationally, yeah. It was Baylor.
Yep. And what happened to Baylor?
You know, obviously I have a sports show, so I know a little bit. There was some sort of sexual scandal, mm-hmm. and it was with a player that had previous incidents, and the coach overlooked him previously.
Yeah, in fact, the story is that the coach's name is Art Briles. Extraordinary individual, really. I happen to be a Art Briles fan. And Art Briles has probably accomplished more at the collegiate NCAA football level in the last 10 years of anybody alive. He took an absolute destitute program at a podunk school that was a bottom dweller, and he turned it into a national powerhouse.
National title contenders for the past 3-4 years.
Right. Yep. And his name is Art Briles. His son's the offensive coordinator. Very low-key, humble guy. And he was fired at Baylor. I can understand why he was fired at Baylor. And Ken Starr, who is an absolute bastard, one of the worst human beings I've ever met in my life, was demoted, taken from president to he's now a professor over at the law school, mainly because he lawyered up and didn't want to take any personal responsibility. The story is that at Baylor there were there was a young man, and I'm not I don't claim to have perfect recollection here. I'm just going to give you the summary of events, and I could be wrong here, but the gist of the story, as I understand it, back at the time that Gary Patterson was the head football coach at Boise State, they had dismissed a player for undisclosed indiscretions. And he was a really a talented player, and so Art Briles asked the kid if he wanted to come to Baylor to play after Briles allegedly asked Patterson whether or not the kid's indiscretion should preclude him from consideration. And Art Briles said that that the indiscretion was never made known to him. He gets him to Baylor, and the kid gets into to trouble. And it is learned that that the young man's indiscretion at Boise State was of a sexual nature, that he engaged in inappropriate sexual conduct with a woman. And so Briles dismisses him, doesn't play him. The kid, I don't think, even plays a down for Baylor. And he goes on to rape a girl at Baylor, and he is convicted of that rape. The problem there now is not Art Briles. The problem there is Ken Starr and that administration at Baylor for siding with the football player and against the victim, which is standard operation for that administration. It's a horrid, horrid place. And then the next one was that there was a young man played football for Penn State, for Pedophile U. And by the way, all you Penn State fans out there, Joe Pa absolutely knew. He was part of conversations that discussed Sandusky raping little boys in the football facilities at Penn State. But he brings in a young man from Penn State. I don't know what his motivation was, but he also had an issue, was released from Penn State and was brought into Baylor. He played for Baylor, and he committed a sexual assault on a young woman at Baylor. The university responded very poorly to her, and there was no action taken by Art Briles against the young man. The young man was later convicted of rape. And there's one other outstanding case of an accusation yet unproven of a woman and a football player and a couple of other brawls on the football team. And then the whole series of other issues related to Baylor having nothing to do with the football program. And so he was Art Briles was fired, and Ken Starr over that administration was pushed off to the side. You know, can you imagine, though, being the Board of Regents and saying, you know, we're going to fire the guy that made the biggest contribution to this university in the history of the school?
Well, recruited RG3, they figure a Heisman is worth $1 billion in college?
Yeah, they think that publicity was worth half a billion is the numbers that I've heard, okay. $500 million. Yep. But it turned into a $250 million football stadium just across the Brazos River from the school. And this is really I understand that, and I don't know Art Briles' thinking with the second incident. And if he brought in a kid that was known to have a sexual assault, I don't know if he was charged at Penn State. I don't know the nature of that assault. But if he in any way created the opportunity for him to assault a student at Baylor, then, you know, he needs to bear some responsibility for that. But how does that differ from, say, since this is Ken Starr, you know, he prosecuted and impeached Bill Clinton for having sex with an intern while in the Oval Office, both being paid by the U.S. taxpayer, and he's having sex with an intern. How does what Art Briles did compare to what Bill Clinton did? And by the way, and under oath, Bill Clinton lied about it, which means that he perjured himself, mm-hmm. which is a crime. In business, Kirk, if you had employees in your art school, I don't know if you do or don't, but if you do,
I did once.
Okay, okay. And if you had sex with one of your subordinates, you better make
that was sexual harassment. I mean,
man,
it is everything that goes with it. Yeah,
you are in serious trouble.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, okay,
so Bill Clinton actually lied under oath, impeached himself, and had sex with a 21-year-old intern or 22-year-old intern in the Oval Office of the United States, using all the trappings of the federal government to have sex with an intern. And and he's exonerated. He keeps his job.
Mm-hmm.
And Art Briles, who didn't do anything inappropriate with women, loses his. Now, I understand if Art Briles knew or should have known that one of his football players had acted inappropriately with a young woman, and if he obstructed justice, then it's a crime. He should have been prosecuted. But there's no indication of that. If he should have known, you know, it's not just, you know, the problem with a lot of the sexual indiscretion kinds of things is that he said, she said, who knows what the truth is.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, shame on him if he should have known. But I have certainly not read anything that indicates that he should have known. But nonetheless, he violated Title IX requirements. Title IX happens to be the single worst bit of legislation I can think of in terms of negatively impacting academia in America and society as a whole. But he ran afoul of Title IX, and he's summarily dismissed. He doesn't even get his day in court. I mean, no rebuttal.
You don't have an appeal or anything?
Yeah, nothing.
Wow.
He didn't even get to tell his football players goodbye.
Wow.
And Ken Starr gets moved over to the side. Now, the same day, guess what also came out? The head of the Joint Chiefs, during a congressional hearing on whether or not claims of sexual abuse, and there's every day just of women in the military, there's 50 men and women, mostly women, but 50 men and women every day that are abused sexually in the U.S. military by other men and women in the U.S. military. 50 a day. The numbers are staggeringly high, you know, in the tens of thousands each year, with less than 1% prosecuted and convicted in terms of the perpetrators. He was testifying before the Congress and about retaining the jurisprudence related to sexual abuse of women. And by the way, when I'm speaking here about Baylor, there's nothing that I find more disgusting than the abuse of women, if it's unless it's pedophilia. I think pedophilia is the single worst crime that can be committed.
Right.
Yeah, incest, which is usually involves pedophilia, is right up there at you know, bottom rung of bad. But abusing women, which is, you know, the nature of Islam, for example, you know, I put up there as amongst the worst things somebody can do. And not standing up for against those who abuse women is a horrible crime. So if Art Browse knew or had reason to know, and he stood by the perpetrator and did not try to help the victim, shame on him. I'm glad he's gone. But the U.S. military, the same day, it comes out in the news that when the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was testifying before the U.S. military, he says, the reason you ought to let jurisprudence as it relates to sexual abuse of women in the U.S. Armed Forces stay within the chain of command in the military as opposed to go to civil courts. The military is the only place in the country where you're tried in a military court as opposed to a civil court. Whole different set of rules in a military court. Chain of command applies. You know, you don't have the freedom that you have in a civil court. And so he testified, he says, the reason you ought to leave it within the U.S. military is because last year, for example, there were, and I think he listed 175 cases that the civil authorities were unwilling to prosecute, that we in the military saw fit to prosecute. So if you turn it over to civilian prosecutors, there's, for example, 175 victims that would never have had their day in court. And so the congressmen and the senators, upon hearing that, repeated it and said, you know, that's a pretty good argument in favor of leaving it in the military system. Guess what?
Well,
complete fraud.
Mm-hmm.
He knew it to be a fraud at the time. Of those 175, well over 100 of them weren't even cases. There was no claim of sexual harassment. And 100 of them, well over 100 of them, which is when they weren't prosecuted. And of the remaining number, either he just outright lied, they were prosecuted. The civil courts did want to prosecute him, but they were precluded from doing so by the feds, or that the U.S. military did nothing. Every bit of it was a lie, and he knew it to be a lie at the time. And the place in America that a woman is most subject to being sexually abused is the U.S. military. General didn't lose his job. Why is Art Browse gone? Why did Bill Clinton retain his job? Why is Art Browse gone? Why was Ken Starr moved from president of the university to chancellor of the law school? Do you know that it was about 2 weeks ago that a judge in Washington, D.C. ordered all of the Obama administration's Department of Justice lawyers to go back to school and take ethics classes? He says, I'm not kidding. This is an absolute order. I'm reprimanding you. You must, as an order from the court, go back to law school and take ethics classes because you routinely and knowingly lie to this court. That is not acceptable. The man that prosecuted Bill Clinton was head of a university that systematically abused the victims of sexual harassment. And he retained his job full salary. How about them apples?
I tell you, that's me painting a very ugly picture.
Yeah, there's another story I want to tell, and I understand you have one, too, that's economics. This one is actually somewhat economic-related. There was the story came out because of a farmer that was selling his crops as he would harvest them. He was a small farmer. And he had a deposit anywhere from, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 each time that he would make a transfer of whatever the crops were that he was harvesting from his field.
Mm-hmm.
And a federal judge gave the IRS permission to confiscate his entire bank account, his entire savings. And when he said why, he said, there's a, it's called bracketing, I think. You're guilty of bracketing. But what does that mean? That means that you on a routine basis, deposited less than $10,000. And you deposited less than $10,000 fairly routinely. So because of the fact that we think that you may be circumventing the disclosure requirements within banks to disclose, $10,000 withdrawals and deposits, we've got a court order to confiscate your money. We're not returning it. Tens of millions, in fact, hundreds of millions of dollars have been stolen from Americans for that exact reason. You can't deposit your money. It's a crime. You can't withdraw it either.
What about part-time businesses like my retirement years now where I routinely deposit $110,000? Are they going to come take it all away?
Yeah, they can.
I mean, my God.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Welcome to America.
God, it makes me sick.
Yep. Did you hear about old Bernie Sanders? He was he appointed about a third of the delegates to frame the Democratic platform, and he says that Democratic support for Israel is waning, and that that the U.S. government needs to start looking into and caring more about the plight of the Palestinian people and the occupation of Jews in Gaza and the West Bank. You know, where would you find a Palestinian? I'm just curious as to...
In a graveyard somewhere near in the Sinai Desert, if you could excavate that deep.
you'd have to go back. I mean, we have really old bones. The last Palestinian was killed 2,500 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is not even any indication they were hauled off into slavery.
They had no language now.
There's not a single building. Not a single written record, not a single statement by anybody anywhere in the world about the Philistines other than in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. That's the only place they're even mentioned there. And apart from there, they are completely unknown to history. There's not a single relic from them. And
I don't think you can save the Palestinians till you can find them.
Yeah, the Assyrians... finished them.
Okay.
Yeah, finished them.
Okay.
Nothing left of them. And they weren't the target of anything. They just happened to be in the way. And they were in the way between the battles between the Assyrians, the Babylonians, and the Egyptians. Matter of fact, when Alexander the Great went through there about 300 BCE, he battled some people. I mean, he was really ruthless with the Phoenicians, particularly with Tyre and places like that, because they just didn't surrender to him. But on his way down through Egypt, through the area that we now know as Gaza, he got involved in a couple of skirmishes, but it was with Egyptians, because most of the time it was an Egyptian outpost area.
Yeah. Yeah, quite a string of them all the way up.
Yeah, but you imagine old Bernie Sanders, you know, he's a communist. Communist, you know, secular humanists, they just hate Jews, don't they?
Yeah, he's fantastic, too. Anyways, so I have a question for you. I asked you and IQ this one time. Mm-hmm. What happens if Israel puts down their weapons and says, we're not fighting anymore, we're done? Do whatever.
You're wiped out.
Oh, in fact, what we're going to do is we're going to withdraw back to the 1967 borders. We're not only going to, which we've already done on the west side, but we're going to do the same thing on the east side. We're going to withdraw to the 1967 borders, mm-hmm. and we're going to be a de-armed zone here, and we're going to put down all of our weapons and withdraw to 1967 borders. You know what would happen?
What happens if that happens? I know what happens.
Well, yeah, it'd probably be anywhere from 1 week to 1 year, and there wouldn't be a Jew left in Israel, and the entire nation would be completely destroyed. That's what would happen.
Okay, now let's flip that around. What happens if all the countries around them decide, hey, we're done. We're not doing this anymore. Let's. We're all putting down our arms.
Oh, and look at the amount of land we have. I mean, the last thing we need is land carved out of the smallest, by far, state in the region. We've got all the Sinai, which is just sitting here idle. We've got, you know, 99% of Saudi Arabia's got no one living in it. Majority of Jordan's got nobody living in it. You know, Syria's been depopulated. We got a whole country there that we could go to because they're fleeing there. Why don't we just move into one of those other countries and let's just all focus on doing the right thing. We're just not going to be terrorists anymore.
That, I'm sure Israel starts pushing on the offensive, huh? The expanded borders. I mean, that's got to be it, right?
You know, to support this two-state solution and reward terrorists, Islamic terrorists, with a country that they will do the same thing to they've done to Gaza is insane. I mean, you have to be morally bankrupt, which tells you a lot about the leftists in this country.
I can tell you right now that most of the politicians are morally bankrupt in this country.
They are. Yes.
You heard that the Huffington Post called out for the Christian Pastors of America to recognize Muhammad as a prophet.
Oh, great. You know, the Huffington Post is one time I actually used them as a news feed, and I've just completely disassociated everything from them because everything that I read from them editorially is insane. Yeah, and, of course, that's insane. You know, what does the Quran say about Muhammad being a prophet?
He wasn't.
The Quran says he was not a prophet.
He's not a prophet.
What does the written record that we have from the Hadith and the Quran in terms of prophecy from Muhammad? Is there a single accurate prophecy that Muhammad made?
None.
Okay. So the evidence from the evidence, that's right. Paul made one prediction. He got it wrong. And Muhammad made hundreds of predictions, none of the Quran. The Quran just says, I'm flat out, I am not a prophet. But in the Hadith, Muhammad does make a number of predictions. They are all absolutely laughable. The one that you know, I based my book on is called Prophet of Doom. Muhammad predicted that 500 years after his demise, there'd be the day of judgment when the world would come to an end. That was, you know, it was 632 CE. So we're that would have been in the 12th century. Didn't happen, did it?
No.
So that's why I called him Prophet of Doom. Is because he all he did is recommend the day of doom, and he did bring doom on the world. So for the Huffington Post to say that's what Christian pastors ought to do, is to say A, that they have no idea what the word prophet means, what the test of a prophet is, or that Muhammad was absolutely, unequivocally declared not a prophet in the Quran itself.
Well done.
Maybe they're just spelling prophet wrong. Maybe it's the P-R-O-F-I-T.
Yes, but for him to P-R-O-F-I-T, and I have a chapter in Prophet of Doom called War Made a Prophet, and P-R-O-F-I-T, that was the Battle of Badr. That was the first official act in the Islamic era was the Battle of Badr. There was no battle. It was armed robbery. Yeah. And the Quran itself in the 8th Surah specifically says it was armed robbery, that Muhammad went there for a singular purpose, and that was to rob the civilian caravan. It was an act of murder, of torture, of kidnapping, of selling a kidnapped victim via ransom, of stealing, and of armed robbery. That's how Islam was created. It's the first official act in the Islamic era. It's called the Battle of Badr. Read the 8th Surah. It's all laid out there for you. Yeah, so Islam definitely made a profit. Muhammad inspired 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era, with Badr being the first of them. Badr means of the full moon. And he kept 20% of what his jihadists stole, and they got to keep 80% of what they stole. That's how Islam spread.
My favorite thing now is where they tell me everything that the Islam has given to the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The rape, systematic rape, kidnapping, mass murder, jihad, religious endorsement for terrorism, abject poverty, mistreatment of women. But yeah, they've given a lot of things to the world.
Where are all the factories in the Muslim world that produce everything? There aren't any.
Well, the only places where there are factories in the Islamic world, labor is so cheap and women are treated so poorly. There are there are sweatshops in Bangladesh to sew goods. Prior to Erdogan taking Turkey back to fundamentalist Islam, you know, Turkey had a period of time where it was a fairly secular country under the military rule, and during that time. There's a number of Western companies that built assembly plants in Turkey.
Yeah.
And there are some menial jobs making shoes and and clothing, apparel, that sort of thing, in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm. That's.
And by the way, none of those
are not great factories. You know, I think they could build a Coca-Cola machine,
And none of those things are technical products. None of them are designed in the Islamic world. None of the factories were built by an Islamic country.
No, the company.
Yeah.
Replace them. This is not a sophisticated society. I don't know why everybody acts like. You know, if you didn't supply them with the guns and the training, they couldn't do anything.
Which is really the point. You want to stop the spread of Islamic terrorism. You want to stop the atrocities that are taking place in Syria. All you need to do is to isolate Islam, stop buying the oil, and stop selling them weapons. Did you hear that Putin told the Islamic world in a big summit that you have a reliable friend in Russia?
No, I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah.
But
it's pretty disgusting. You know, so here he is. He's getting all the flack because he's bombing Sunni Islamic terrorists on behalf of Shia Islamic terrorists, and so he wants to endear himself with Sunni Islamic terrorists by saying, you've got a friend in Russia. You've got a friend, count on me. Now, you said you had a conversation with somebody that was up in the hierarchy of General Electric that had reason to, in advance of the 2008 housing banking crisis predict the economic downturn?
Well, they do study. You know, large corporations do studies, and this is from a friend of mine who was really high up, and he told me what their biggest concerns were, and when they did this study. And last week when we were chatting about some economic things, it kind of led to the. It all kind of put a lot of the pieces together when I remembered what he had said to me. And they did a study, and you being in business on a large scale will appreciate this. They estimated that our population obviously was not growing.
Right.
The only growth that we had
was
immigration. And that was generally starter level jobs, because when you come over here, say, from Mexico or something, you're probably not the right out of college type of crowd.
Yeah. Although I would tell you that having lived in Southern California, the Hispanics that, and I would agree that a lot of them had menial laborers.
Right.
But the number of Hispanics that I employed that owned their own business, that were very capable businessmen, was very high. And, and the vast majority of them were honorable, hard-working, very capable individuals. But anyway,
I'm not talking about the ethics of the work ethic and everything. It's just harder to hit the ground running when you move,
don't speak the language.
Give up everything and move to a foreign country.
Right. And don't speak the language.
Don't speak the language.
Okay, so when we return, we're going to hear about the GE forecast on economic downturn. We'll be back.